The Attack Zone, Episode 4, Gen Con 2017. Hello there, Dice fans. You have once again stepped into the Attack Zone, where we bring you the A to Z of competitive Dice Masters. This is Dave here, and joining me on the line once again is the most well-traveled man in Dice Masters, JT. How are things, JT? What's up?
Things are good, man. It's been a good day. Good family day. Took the girls fishing a little bit this afternoon, which means nice. I didn't really fish, but I baited hooks and cast out lines and untangled from trees and all kinds of good stuff. So
I've still, more recently than I'm proud to admit, have gotten something tangled in a tree.
I had the most epic tree tangle in the world last summer. I had just bought this new lure that my uncle, who's like an expert angler, recommended, and I was like, okay, you know, if Uncle Jay says to get it, man, that's what you fish with. Like, you don't mess around. If this guy says to do it, you do it. So I bought it. It's like a $15 lure, and I cast it, and it, I mean, this little janky pole I got, I mean, it's a Shakespeare combo rod, you know, little 5 foot pole, and I put this heavy lure on it, launched it right into a tree, and I must have fought. I must have fought the thing. I mean, this is like the first or second cast with this lure. I must have fought the thing like 40 minutes. My line is all stretched out. There's no integrity to it left at all, and like just somehow popped it loose after fighting with the thing for like 40 minutes. We're on a boat in a finger of a lake, and like my brother, my brother-in-law, my dad, they're all fishing. I'm fighting this tree, and suddenly it pops loose. Like my brother is ready to say, "We're cutting your line. We're leaving. We're going somewhere else." It pops loose, and reeled it in. Set that pole aside. Didn't fish with the pole the rest of the trip because the line was just shot. I mean, I had yanked on it, pulled on it. It was all stretched out. I mean, it would have snapped any second. And I got my lure back. So
that's something. Yep. Yeah, a pretty similar story for me. It wasn't that great a lure. It wasn't like a $15 lure. But yeah, that was it was not a fun experience. We had a pretty great weekend too, actually. We hit up the Pittsburgh Renaissance Festival, which was a lot of fun. They do it a little south of Pittsburgh off of I-70. And, you know, I'd never gone before, and now I don't know why I hadn't gone before. It was a blast. We really enjoyed ourselves. Hung out with some friends of ours and all that, visited the family. So, yeah, pretty busy, but definitely good. And you can just feel like fall is coming, right?
Oh, man.
The temperatures, it's been a little bit chillier than normal.
Good.
And
weather's so good right now.
I'm excited. But, all right, well, I guess we should maybe talk about some Dice Masters. I mean, we did play some board games. We played Bonanza. That was fun. You guys said you got in some Five Tribes?
Got in Five Tribes yesterday, yep. Three new players, which was cool.
Yeah. I haven't played that in a bit, but I also haven't introduced it to anybody who didn't like it afterwards.
Right.
It's a really, really fun game. I like that almost Mancala kind of, or worker displacement. I don't know how you would.
Oh, I told
Kala, but I love it.
Yeah, so I had a buddy come over and taught him and his son and my daughter. And I told him before he came to brush up on Mancala because, you know, that's exactly what you're doing, right? Like, you got to find a move where you can match at the end, but that's definitely that mechanic where you're picking up and dropping off and setting stuff up. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It's good stuff. All right. Well, we do have a six-pack today. We thank everybody for bearing with us as we've had just some scheduling snafus and whatnot, people traveling, Mike moving, and a lot of things going on. So it does make it difficult. Summer is when people tend to schedule a lot of this stuff, and so it affects everybody too. There are some people I have still not heard from, so I'm going to get another round of emails out and get some stuff here sent out soon. But there still aren't some people I've heard. Let me think. Strike that. Reverse it. There are still some people I have not heard of. Heard from, rather, for our last giveaway. So we'll be trying to get things together with that and again, we thank you for bearing with us. But we do have a six-pack today from the Batman set. I think there's some cards in here that should be fun to discuss. So let's just get right to it. All right, so we start with the common villain, Bane, King of Peñaduro. He's a five-fist villain. Gadgeteer, that's what he's got. And of course, that's the mechanism where you, when he attacks, you can roll an action die from a used power, a continuous one. If you roll an action phase, then you can put it in your field. So, what do you think of Bane, JT?
He's a five or six cost.
Five fist.
Five fist. So, if you've got some other way to ramp, he's a good body, and I know there are a couple drafters out there who love to use delayed blast fireball, and boy, if you get delayed blast fireball, you know, you can just keep chucking those things out there with Gadgeteer, and he's a good body. So for that reason, you know, if you're that style, maybe you think about him because he's a way to pull those out of your, you know, if you've got four dice in your bag and delayed blast fireball goes off, wonderful, because you're going to draw and then you can attack and try and bring that right back in on the next turn. So that's about the only strategy that I see with him. And in drafts, delayed blast fireball is great because it's a protective wall, right? It does all that damage to those attackers so they don't end up coming through, even if you don't have blockers. And then your own characters can go through unblocked. So definitely something to watch out for, even if it's not your style, but probably not my first pick.
Nor mine, but I should point out with delayed blast fireball, I see some people conflate it with what regular fireball does, where fireball hurts everybody. Delayed blast fireball does only go off on that opposing side of the board, so sometimes misunderstood. I know people who will swear that that text is also on DBF, but it's really just fireball that affects both sides. All right, moving on then, we have Hawk, Hank Hall, for the alliterative fans out there. Five-fist Teen Titan. While Dove is active, he gets +2/+2. And he has a global. You pay a fist. Target attacking character die gains one attack until the end of turn. Character dice may only be targeted by this global once per turn. I guess we should run through stats. He fields 1/1/2, and his stats go 2/2, 5/2, and 7/4.
Yeah, so that level 1 face is just a problem for me for that cost.
Yes.
You know, we've talked before about this. You know, these pairs that give each other +2/+2 are great. But in this set, Hawk and Dove are just a little bit too expensive for me to try and go with that strategy. So I think I'm probably going to lean away from this one. I love the Hawk-Dove combo. You know, especially, I think it's the uncommon Hawk that does damage equal to his attack when Dove is KO'd. You know, boy, in Constructed, just go wild. But in draft, I think you got to consider cost as a big piece of the evaluation. And I just don't see the value for this ability.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say anything more to add to that, especially when, you know, you got the uncommon and stuff out there, but cost is a factor. And I like more consistency on dice faces, especially in draft, than what you have here. So I agree wholeheartedly with that level one face.
Well, so Giant Man went 1/1/4/4/7/7.
Yeah.
But he was a 3 and a 4 cost, if memory serves.
That's true. And yeah, getting a 2/2 for 5 is just not very enticing.
You're going to field him at that, and you have to pay 1 to do it. That's so demoralizing. Mm-hmm. And I recognize, like, he's probably going to be knocked out as a blocker and then come back. But, that's a whole nother wasted turn. So you had to build to buy him, then he had to come through your bag, then you had to pay to field him. And then you had to wait for him to get knocked out as a blocker in order to come back bigger. Like, that just doesn't work for me. So if I were drafting Hawk, like, I would need a spinning global, you know, like a a mutation or a polymorph, depending on what's legal in your store. Like, I would need something that lets me spin my characters up to take advantage of the body that I bought.
Right. No, I agree with you there. Okay, so we have the Joker. The joke's on you. He's 4 shield, flip card, so he's either Batman or villains. Let's start with the Batman face, Bat Family face. While active, opposing Bat Family character dice can attack unless your opponent pays 2 generic energy per die. On the other side, he is a villain. While the Joker is active, your Bat Family character dice get +1/+1. He fields 1/1/2. His stats go 1/4, 2/5, and 3/6. I'm a fan of it, especially if you could get like the Batmaker Global out there. But
yeah, situationally, right?
Yes,
that's the thing. Great tech piece later on.
Not fan like high pick. Just
right. I love the Common Joker. In fact, I used him recently in a draft, but. Probably more a situational later round pick. You can't lead with this.
Nope. Not at all. Not only that, because like he can work, especially if you have, say, a trusted friend, or if you just have a lot of Batman cards out there, you can draft into it. But you have to know too late in the round that can I spend the slot on having not just the Joker, but the other card that's going to help me enable, you know, the protection that he could offer, you know, not being able to attack, adding that cost, etc. And even then, it doesn't do anything to win you anything. So it's an intriguing ability and can combo with some stuff, but it's just not what we're looking for in round one of a draft. Oh, Mr. Miracle, one of my favorite 2 costs here, Great Escape, 2 mask, New God. Cannot be targeted by opposing action dice or abilities.
Man, I just love the uncommon so much more. Not being able to be targeted is good, but it's not as if he's the threat that would be targeted by abilities. So, although I'll say this, man, anytime you get a cheap die out in front, especially if a... you know, a common red hood gets passed your way, boy, I just, you know, you got to take advantage of those every time you get a chance. So, aside from that, though, his ability doesn't make me, you know, get too excited unless there was something in the set, you know, some sort of equipment in the set that, you know, made your opponent target him, then that's one thing. But as is, it's probably not something I'm going to jump for, even mid. Maybe late, I pick up an extra die, but probably not early or middle.
It just helps him be stickier. That's what I enjoy about it. And I've taken this. I ran a New Gods team in a draft to pretty good effect, and he was on it. He certainly wasn't like a top pick, but he was there and did some work. Just him being on the board, especially if you get the then you get like Big Barda out there, perhaps too. The uncommon, get some protection there. I agree with you though that the uncommon with Mr. Miracle can just do a whole lot of work. That's of course the one when he's knocked out, you can move another character die from your field zone into your prep area, and then if you do that, you can return Mr. Miracle to the field zone at level 3. I like that ability a lot.
Yeah.
All right then, Mr. Freeze, Dr. Victor Freeze. 5-bolt villain. When fielded, put a stun token on an opposing character card. So stun character cards, dice cannot attack or block. The card's owner has to pay 2 generic energy anytime they could use a global to remove that stun token. He fields for 1 on all faces, and his stats go 4-2, 5-3, and 6-4. I am a fan of the stun token. Are you, JT?
Oh, I love the stun tokens. I'm a bigger fan of the one... you know, when he's blocked or blocks, but man, the stun token is just so frustrating to play against because, you know, you have designs, you have plans, maybe you're facing against the Red Hood and You know, you just, someone's got one Red Hood and three Ace the Bat Hounds, and you shut down Ace the Bat Hound's ability to attack. Well, Red Hood just loses a ton of pump that way. So I love the ability. I love the concept. I love the design. I'm a bigger fan of the different versions of Mr. Freeze in the coming, but it can be so frustrating to play against this. So, you know, if you're of the mind to try and play a little bit of control and frustrate your opponent, this is a great pick. Yeah.
I agree, and you know, they've tried a couple of different ways to get Mr. Freeze to be thematic, and I think, mostly in the World's Finest set, I think this time they really kind of got it. I think the stun token fits, but I would really like to see actually the stun token make it into other parts of the game. I'd like to see that be a mechanism, not just unique to Mr. Freeze, because I think we could see some cards in, well, from other superheroes as well as in D&D use that to pretty fun effect and thematic effect.
Yeah, definitely.
I'd like to see it more. All right, then. Continuing our last common, Orion, God of War, a 6-bolt new god. When he's knocked out, return him to the field zone at level 1.
So this is a 6 cost, right?
It is a 6 cost, yeah.
Talk about sticky. Yep. Like, you can't underestimate the value of a blocker that doesn't go anywhere. Especially, so in a draft, let's say you've got a pot of 8. Let's just, for sake of example. So I know, you know, like my store is lucky to get any more than 4 in a draft. You know, it's just the way we are, right? If I go up to Cleveland, I can play in a draft of, you know, 10 easy, but let's just say we've got 8. In a draft of 8, there's probably 2 common Red Hoods out there, right? And you know that you're going to see it. So if you didn't get the chance to draft it, you know you're going to face it. Something like this is going to be so frustrating for your opponent because you just keep blocking Red Hood and he can't knock him out. He can't. Now, that said, Red Hood is a 3 cost. This guy's a 6 cost. You know, beefy body, but you got to be able to do something else with him. So, you know, you've got to bring something, you know, the danger in bringing something like this is, obviously your opponent can use it if they've got the Red Hood, but you got to bring something like Haymaker is where I'm going. So something that lets the big body push through some damage. It makes the investment worthwhile. I love that he's sticky. Love the ability, but it's pretty hard to make it into a win condition that doesn't help your opponent somehow in this set.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, if you look out and you see a lot of Red Hood dice, this is likely to be a card that would wheel. Right. So it's not necessarily something you need to prioritize anyway.
Right.
But speaking of prioritization, we are at the end of the commons. So right now, with 6 cards out of the way, what do we like here, if anything?
I'm probably willing to set all of these aside and gun for something in the other 6.
Mm-hmm. See what synergizes.
Yeah, we talk about this a lot. Like, it's not just what's good out of this pack, but it's what fits with the other 6. It's what do the dice, you know, in the rainbow tell us. You know, that's something that Patrick is just phenomenal at, is looking at the number of dice and, you know, determining, okay, of those, probably X are common, Y are uncommon, and Z are rare. And knowing what those abilities are, you know, let's talk about Mr. Miracle, right? Like, I'm a bigger fan of the uncommon. If I see 6 Mr. Miracle dice out there, I might take a chance at seeing the uncommon and think about taking the common at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's information that we just don't have.
That's true. That's true. Okay, then let's look at the uncommons. We'll start with Ra's al Ghul, Fighting Death himself. 6-mask villain. While he is active, your opponent may not declare non-villain character dice as attackers unless they pay 1 generic energy per die. And he has a global that fits with this. You pay a mask, target character card loses villain affiliation until end of turn. He fields 1/1/2. His stats go 4/4, 5/5, and 6/6. Talk about something annoying to play around.
Oh my goodness. This is such a great control card. Mm-hmm. So great. Hard to get to, but very good control card. And he's going to pair with other things in the set.
Right.
So, you know, the villains that pump and so forth, you know, that global just... That works against your opponent if they have villain strategy. It, like, the way it works with Villainous Pact is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. You know, you might be facing if you take Villainous Pact as a win condition, you might be facing a bunch of villains, but you can turn them into non-villains just like that. And now Villainous Pact is even more effective. Now that can be used against you, but if your opponent is not prepared for that, or if they, you know, don't necessarily see it, or they, you know, they look across and they just see Villainous Pact as a ramp global, you know, you can take real advantage of that.
It's true. I like the card a lot. I'll say though, with things like Shocking Grasp Ramp and so forth available, I don't feel too much worry about some of the 6-cost cards. If I think it's going to be worth getting, I feel pretty comfortable that I'll be able to get there.
Sure. Yeah, right. I mean, if you roll an early sidekick and pick up Shocking Grasp, yeah, you can get there. Mm-hmm. The question is, what's worth that type of investment for?
Right. Oh, absolutely. And I don't think that this one is there. If it was something more like, hey, this could help me win... fine. This puts a lot of defensive pressure on, but it doesn't help you get there. Unless you do have Villainous Pact, there is that. The reason that it's not too big a deal that Villainous Pact could be used against you here too, is that non-villain character dice, you having to pay 1 per die to press the attack, right?
Yeah.
None of your things are villains, so Villainous Pack is super effective. Well, it turns out you didn't have a ton of villains. So your opponent would really have had to have drawn into a fair amount of dice themselves to help make things work here, or to make it look, you know, not quite as good against you. Because they may have to pay now to attack.
Right.
I didn't say that very clearly, but I think it's clear. I think it made sense.
Well, the other thing is, so if they buy Villainous Pact and they turn all your stuff into non-villains, that's fine. You increase the cost for them to attack before they attack, right? That's what you're trying to say. You can turn their villains into non-villains, increasing the amount that they have to pay to attack into you, even if they've played Villainous Pact.
That's exactly what I'm saying, yeah. And they may just not have a lot of villains to begin with.
Sure.
So there you go. So I guess if you wanted to look at doing it that way, that would be fine. However, you're probably investing in something to help ramp up to him, as well as the purchase of Villainous Pact itself. So some faster teams may just like leave you behind.
Yeah, so this is a team that's going to have either some sort of pump or some sort of low-cost characters to flood the field with. Something along those lines, mm-hmm. either of those would do, but that's how you turn this into a win condition.
I agree. Okay. Robin, Hero Reborn, finally got a foil here. 3-mask Batman family. He's an ally. When Robin is active, Batman and sidekick dice you control gain 1 defense. He fields 0/0/2 and is Numbers are 2-2, 3-2, and 4-3.
He's all right.
Yep.
That's about it, though.
I agree. Not much else to say there, I don't think. It's good artwork.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, how about another flip card? This time, another foil, too. This is Batwoman Code of Honor for S.H.I.E.L.D., either villain or bat family. We'll start with the villain side first. She can't be blocked by non-villain character dice unless the defending player pays one for each blocking character die. On the other side, common ground, she can't be blocked if she attacks with at least one villain character die. Fields 0-1-2, stats go 3-2-4-3-5-4. As people were probably sick of me saying, anytime something can't be blocked, I pay attention.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, I like the common Kate Kane, right? You know, anytime you can get some of that direct damage, that's great. But the uncommon being unblockable is a big deal.
I agree. And the fact that it also has some of the taxing we've talked about on the other side. Like, it combines some good aspects of multiple cards that we've talked about so far, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, you bring her with the intention of her going through unblocked, and if you happen to see Blink Transmutation on the other side, all right, well, I'm going to tax you one way or the other. You're going to have to pay to either block her, or you're going to have to pay to distract her, right?
Yep. Definitely. And you can't beat that. I mean, it's a really good card. It gets some damage happening. I mean, on the other hand, on the negative side, she would probably, you know, have to cycle back through your bag. But to get through a decent amount of damage, especially if you have some pump globals or other cards that will give you a little more on the attack, then you're in good shape. You know?
I agree.
Yeah, it's a pretty good card. Right now... For now, I think that's the top pick from what we've seen.
I would agree there, too.
Cool. All right, then. We have next the Bat Signal Beacon of Hope. It's a continuous action die. Let me see here. Whenever you could use a global ability, you can send this die to the used pile to deal 2 damage to target attacking villain character die. Also, when the burst or double burst, you can flip target character card you control. The back signals in general intrigue me, but they're not something I consider as an early pick. Generally. Maybe
right.
The rare.
Maybe the rare, simply because it's a one cost. But right, because the effect that's provided here is too situational. Mm-hmm. Right, your opponent has to attack into it, so it's information that they have in advance, and it's not quite enough for me to say that's an early pick.
Right.
You know, if it was 3 damage or even 4 damage because it's only to villain dice, that's great. But it's 2 damage and only to attacking villain dice. I can't pull the trigger here. Even though it gives me an off beginning of turn flip window, there's nothing else that that's flip that's important enough that I want to say, oh, I need to be able to flip that off the beginning of my turn. I'll draft a bat signal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not there for me.
No, I agree. All right, then. Big Barda, our final uncommon. While Big Barda is active, New God character dice cannot be damaged by villain character dice or action dice. I guess I should say her card is called Spare the Mega Rod, a 5-fist New God character. So, yeah, New God characters can't be damaged by villains or action dice.
So it makes them a little bit sticky, but...
Right. I mean, you have to have a lot of New Gods for this to be worthwhile,
right? Right, and you can look at the rainbow, and you can look at your other 6-pack, but I'm not seeing it for this.
No, this was where I used What I used on my team, I had that. I had the Mr. Miracle. Spoiler alert, the next card is the rare Orion, which altogether was a lot of fun, to be honest with you. No, this is not an early pick. I mean, this is like, you have to be doing something pretty specific for this to be worthwhile. And you might be doing that thing, and great for you. That's kind of all.
Yeah.
So let's get that out of the way then. The rare is the rare Orion. 7 cost, which is pretty wild. But you can get up to it. And I think this one can be worth it if this is one a direction you're looking to go. But a 7 cost new god, 7 bolt that is, Astro Forced Powered Harness. When fielded, deal 2 damage to your opponent. When he attacks, deal 2 damage to your opponent. Fields 1-1-2, 5-5-6-6-8-8 are his stats, as a reminder. And, you know, he will be blocked, more than likely, so you're likely to be able to continue to do that damage. He's one of the more expensive cards like this that has an ability like that. But nonetheless, you're likely to be able to continue doing that damage.
Even if you bring Blink, right? You're going to be able to field him and Blink him on the same turn. So the turn he comes out, very likely you're looking at 4 damage, and then he's a clock. So I actually drafted this as my win condition in the WKO in Detroit. I was very much rare drafting at the time. But when I saw this, I thought, oh, wait, maybe I can actually use that. And, I tell you what, I struggled to get him in a couple different games. The games that I won, I had him, I had been able to purchase him, and you know, it's a terror. It's an absolute terror. The games that I lost, I think every game I lost, I was unable to purchase him, or even if I was able to purchase him, I was unable to get him in the field. So, you'd take a gamble taking this as your win condition.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so effective. As soon as he hits the field, it's so effective.
And it's fun. I mean, it's sometimes nice to just try and get that big body and, you know, go to town.
Yep. Yeah, and this with this effect, it's a Serena ability without your opponent cannot cancel it by spinning mm-hmm. characters down.
Also true. So,
I recognize that it's a 7 cost versus a 2 cost, but man, it's a lot of fun to play with. It really is.
Mm-hmm. So then, what direction are we looking at? Right now, we had liked the Batwoman, which I think is a very effective card. Probably long-term, more consistent than what we have here with the Orion, right?
Yeah, I absolutely believe that. Now, it depends on your style of play. So... Mm-hmm. If you're a Timmy, if you want the big stompy character, then you're going to be drafting the Orion. But if you're probably a Spike or a Johnny at this point, you're looking for the Batwoman. Cause it's going to take, her on the bat side and a villain. So, you know, she doesn't do it by herself. But I think, I think that's where the choice comes down to. So your style of play, what you prefer, but it's going to be one of these two.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. For my part, even though I had some good experiences with the Orion, I would probably look to go Batwoman. I think she's just more versatile. I mean, just in general, thanks to the flip mechanism, right?
Yeah, well, and 4 cost, so you can,
of course,
you're going to be able to buy her in one of your first 2 turns.
Mm-hmm.
That's important, you know, being able to buy bodies early, not having to buy action dice to hopefully ramp and hopefully get there. Like that gets frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that absolutely gets frustrating as someone who took the rare Orion as their win condition and tried to pull it off, that gets frustrating. But it's a very rewarding experience when it goes off. So
it sure is. I can tell you, yeah, it was a lot of fun. So there is that. All right then. So we're probably looking at Batwoman, and there we go. But there is a strong case to be made for that Orion. Is there anything in the other pack that would change your mind from this, beyond some of like the big splashy stuff, like, you know, I don't know, Firefly. Though then again, even with Firefly, I'd probably still take like the Batwoman.
Well, sure, because Firefly is your villain that you need to attack with.
Well, yeah, there you go.
And you know, Firefly probably solidifies my pick for Batwoman. Even though he likes having Bolt characters around, like, Firefly loves just other Fireflies. So it doesn't take the 7 costs to get there. And as a villain, he makes Batwoman go. So I think I'm probably leaning Batwoman, unless I get that itch to go Timmy and get the big stompy character that you know, that just lumbers and does damage. I probably go Batwoman.
Yep. Me too. All right then. let's go on to our topic. Gen Con, you, as the most well-traveled man in Dice Masters, we alluded to earlier, had the chance to attend Gen Con, and you competed in 2 of the events, or just 1?
I competed in all 3.
Oh, all 3? Okay, I wasn't sure if you had time to do all 3. Well, good enough. So all of them, which is great and fun. So you did that, and we had Golden, Modern, and Draft all together there. And we'll get into how you did and what you looked at and how things went later. For now, let's talk about just Gen Con as a whole and how you felt like about the con and what you got to experience. Of course, Randy was there too, and he had the chance to plug the game he's designing to some publishers, which is wonderful for him, and we hope he does really well with that. It's a fun game. I had the chance to try it out. But anyway, the con, I got to live vicariously through you, sir. So tell me.
It's so big. It's so big. My only other Gen Con experience was 2 years ago when Randy and I went and we brewed the Phoenix fastball team in the car on the way, which was just absurd to begin with. But that's my only other Gen Con experience. And kind of drawing on that experience, between Dice Masters events, I happened to run into a buddy of mine, and he was just hanging out with some people, and we started playing some games, and one of the guys says, "Hey, do you want to play my game?" And he pulled out this prototype copy of a game. At the time, he was calling it Tontine, and the Tontine was this type of lottery where, you know, people would buy tickets for this lottery and whoever was alive last won. And Tontines are now outlawed for obvious reasons because there's incentive to kill everyone else who has a ticket. But the game's been published by Smirk and Dagger Games as Dead Last. And so that was my only experience of Gen Con before. Like, I went and I played this game with this random guy who had designed it. And then I saw it published, and I was like, oh, man, I've played that. I played it as a prototype. I have to buy it. And it's exactly the same except for the name, and it's wonderful. It's a terrific party game. It really, really is. But that's my only experience at Gen Con prior to this. And in general, it's much bigger than I'm comfortable with. Like, I one of the best things about Gen Con this year was being able to take 3 of my friends to my favorite pizza place in Indy and just, you know, have a few beers and eat pizza in my favorite place in Indy. And that was one of the best things about Gen Con. And Gen Con is, you know, 60 or 70,000 people. I think they, you know, something like 209 across all 4 days is the estimates. I mean, just absurd. Much, much larger than I'm typically comfortable with. Just not my scene. Like, I don't have any real anxiety around it, but it's just not my scene. Like, I'm much more comfortable in smaller crowds. That's why I like Origins so much, is that you can literally, even though you're in a sea of people, it's much more comfortable for me than Gen Con. But Randy was able to pitch his game to two, I think, publishers. And both of those pitches went well. One of them went exceptionally well. He's pretty excited about it. I'll let him share the details there. But to my knowledge, they've actually asked for a prototype to be sent to them, because they're pretty excited about it. So both of his pitches were to people who got it. And it's a wrestling game. If you friends with Randy on Facebook, you've seen him share those details. Super thematic, and you know, pretty quick, easy to learn, lots of fun. You know, so it hits on all those cylinders for you know, two-player filler games, which two-player games are tough to publish, I'm sure, but it's hitting on all those cylinders, and I think he's got a chance. So, which is, I mean, that's really cool. My experience at actual Gen Con though was great, because I did most of my time with just Dice Masters, and when I wasn't doing Dice Masters, I was with friends. So, despite the crowds, despite the you know, vastness of the event as a whole, I was able to pretty enjoy it as much as I think I could. So,
mm-hmm.
So that's good.
Well, let's talk Dice Masters specifics. Golden, Modern, and Draft. So this sort of gives us like an update on all the formats as we are sitting here at the beginning of the competitive season. Of course, we've had Salt Lake Comic Con, and Mike performed very well there. But now we have this, and we have all three formats at one time. Now, I know for Golden Age, let's get this out of the way. I know Keith won, so congrats to Keith, one of our newest team members. We're super glad he's on board, and we're also super glad that he won Golden. He used Bard Imprisoned, the flavor that I actually took to WKO2 last year, and it was based on something that Michaela did that was based on something that now I'm forgetting his name, did. yeah, so that was pretty great. Always glad to see that. So I guess, kind of as expected there with Golden. I don't think there's some good new stuff out there, but I don't think enough that really unseats what Bard is capable of doing with that
right.
setup.
Right. And so just a little bit about the event as a whole. There were mm-hmm. there were 10 people for that event. And so the way we played it was everyone played round one. So there were five games, and then there was a filler round where just two people played to get into the top four. And I was one of those two people. So I played round one, so I was one of the last five, and then I had to play into the top four. The other three people had a bye. And then in the top four, I played Keith, and we were both playing Bard in Prison. I was playing a Beholder variant, and so... You know, I was playing Imprisoned and the Frontline and Beholder and Bard and, you know, a few other pieces.
Ever since Origins, you just seem to like cramming every win condition possible onto a...
Well, yeah, I mean, essentially it was the same team as I took to the WKO in Detroit when we kind of unveiled the Beholder team. But you know, Keith beat me in the top four. So, you know, kudos to him. You know, that was a heady match. You know, I love playing against tough competitors. I love playing the games that are the hardest to think through. You know, I don't know that I made any glaring mistakes. I just know that he brought Oppression Begins, which meant I had a dead card. And that's, you know, that's part of the thing with Golden at this point, is that there are direct counters. I only out of 10 players, I only saw one professor, but I'm told that there were at least two. So I might have missed one along the way. I think somebody played against both of them. So I trust, you know, the person that told me there were two, but I know that I only saw one. And boy, we talk about so much about, oh, Professor X rotated, now what? But for 8 of the 10 people who played it to expect to see it and not bring it, I think it's pretty telling. Like, the game has matured a significant amount as we've moved into what we call modern, you know, as we've moved into it and moved away from Golden. I think that we see there's a significant amount of value in using that tech slot as tech rather than just pure ramp. And Keith didn't bring Professor. I never saw it in any of my 3 matches that day. It was a really interesting, a lot of fun to play, bringing out some of the old tools. But Professor was not one that I was privy to on Thursday.
I think that's one thing, and maybe this is what you were alluding to, but having Modern now, people have been forced to think of alternative ways to ramp and have some consistency and so forth. And even though when Professor X was a legal card, there were people who were looking at doing that, a lot of us among them, there was still that, you know, hey, Professor X could be here and I have a different plan for that, whatever else. Modern's kind of forced us to look at different ways on the, like, as a whole group of players. And so people were probably able to bring some of that into the Golden Age format too. They don't feel that they have to have it because now they've experienced a variety where they can't have it. And they found they could still do some pretty cool things.
Yeah. Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about the way things were played out, though, because it's neat to get those wheels turning, but then we sat down, everybody played a game, and then we realized, wait a minute, 3 of us got to sit and wait while 2 of us play into the top 4. Because the format was all single elimination, you know, the number of games was always going to be equal to the number of players minus 1. Because everybody's got to be eliminated, right? Everybody but 1 has to be eliminated. So I think the judge did the absolute best they could, but on this day, we kind of talked about how things would go the next couple days, and we talked about how there was a group of us who thought the best way to pull this off, because prizing was top 8 and above, the best way to pull this off would be do the buys into the top 8 versus any other time. Make sense? Like, so, as a, you know, kind of a compensation, like, everybody got top 8 prizing day 1, even though there were, you know, only 2 of us who had to play into the top 4, everybody got top 8 prizing. And then beyond that, the buys went into the top 8. So you had to play round 1 and then buys to the top 8. And I thought that that was much better, even though it broke up the day kind of the same. Like, there was still a group of people who played and then had a buy and then played again. It felt more natural. So I hope that we don't see single elimination as the format of choice moving forward. You know, it was best of 3 50-minute matches, so I don't think anyone got shorted the opportunity to play and win. But I really like the top cut format, so I really hope we don't see this as the format of choice moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I had to guess, it was more due to the fact of, hey, we're at this giant gaming convention, and if we don't say, hey, we have things in place that will limit some of the time that you're going to spend on this, that it would have been fewer players coming in. Because, I mean, there's even been discussion amongst those of us who really enjoy Dice Masters about how much of our time at Origins, the game takes up if we're there to play it. And that's from people who are inclined to want to go there and do those things. And have kind of, there's still been a little bit of that lamentation. But now Gen Con has even more stuff to do and more people and impact game releases and all those sorts of things. And they might have wanted to kind of throw a bone in that direction because there's a lot of reasons to go to Gen Con. It's a more expensive con to get to stay at, harder to navigate, etc., compared to especially Origins. So that's my suspicion.
I totally agree. I'm just voicing a hope that that's the case. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, come, assuming we see a fall, winter, and spring round of WKOs, I'm just hoping that they stick with, you know, Swiss into a top cut style.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, all right then. Let's look into what was next in the order of the days. Was it draft or modern?
It was draft.
It was draft? Okay, so let's talk about draft. Obviously, this was the, from by pre-registration and indeed by what actually happened there, this was the most in-demand event amongst what was going on there. So 22 people?
22, which I felt good about. You know, obviously mm-hmm. we would have liked to see 25 because that would have given a fourth qualification. But 22, which meant we had 11 first round matches, and that left us with needing to play three games after that to get to a top eight. And so fortunately this time around, I played my first match and then got a bye to the top eight. So there were three games going on while five of us had a bye. And I will tell you, we had three draft pods. So we had a two sevens and an eight. I think is the way we did it. And I saw a boatload of Red Hood dice. I think I saw five Red Hood dice and six Firefly dice, and I was just thinking, oh man, I am going to get smoked if we play within our pod. But I had one of each pass to me. I think one in the first six and one in the second six. Yeah, I was pretty surprised, and they were, you know, fourth or fifth picks for me. So they were not like one person passed them to me. They were like down the line. And so those were the only Red Hoods and Fireflies I saw, was one of each. So I obviously took one of each. And like a knucklehead, I only brought the Red Hood because I thought, oh, one Firefly is not enough to do much. Stupid. That's so stupid. It was such a big mistake, and it cost me peace of mind throughout the day because I ended up playing two three turn each sudden death matches in the day. I had to play Craig in one of those, and I, oh man, it's late. It's been, you know, almost 2 weeks. I don't remember who the second one was. I think it was ended up being in the top four. I feel bad. I don't remember who I played in the top four. But I think that's where it was. And it was, you know, it was just like so stressful knowing that I had to push damage through combat, and I was facing, I think in each of those I was facing Firefly teams. And so, you know, they knew that they were going to be able to field Fireflies, because in each of those matches I either had Resurrection or Villainous Pact. So, lesson learned, no reason not to bring Firefly on a Red Hood team. Honestly, I played four matches. I played a lot more games, but I played four matches, and each of my matches was against either Firefly or Red Hood. And my basic actions were blink and Hulk out. And I thought, you know what? I just plan on outplaying my opponent. You know, you don't try and bring blink on a Red Hood team when you only have one Red Hood die. But I thought boy, I, you know, the masks, because I had the common hot girl who spins herself up. I think I had three of her, and she's a two-cost mask. So she, when attacked, she's, you know, spin herself up one level. I thought, you know, I can deal with people trying to attack into me. If people get Firefly in the field, I can keep him there and not worry about him, you know, going through and just kind of sit there idle. And if I was knocking him out, at least, you know, I felt like with Hulk out, I'd be able to push damage through. So, okay, so Firefly comes back, but he's only going to do, you know, one, two, maybe three. And at least I was able to push damage through with the Hulk out die. So that's kind of the way I saw it and the way I built my team. I know I drafted at least three Ace the Bat Hounds. And, you know, as a two-cost fist, just, you know, just for another extra attacker, right? You know, anything to pump the red. That's right, anything to pump the red. In my last game of the day, I played against Joel Cerrone from Toledo, of PDC kind of fame. And, you know, Joel's been in and out of the game locally recently. I mean, like on a grander scale, you know, still doing the PDC stuff, but locally, probably not been as active as he'd like. I know there's a lot of life events that kept him away. But getting the chance to draft, you know, he wanted to take advantage of it. And Joel drafted three Red Hoods. So I felt like I was just like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a nightmare. Like, I'm just, I really had to play lights out to be able to take him down. And he brought Villainous Pact. And so, you know, even though I ended up in one of our games buying all three Hulk outs at the cost of not fielding a character that turn. So I rolled a character I had to pay to field, but instead I spent all four energy on buying the last two Hulk outs. I thought, okay, I can breathe because I just took away all of the overcrush in the game. The very next turn, he bought Villainous Pact, and I was like, wait a minute, I really don't have villains that block. And it was, you know, so it was another, you know, just challenging match. And that's what makes it the best, right, is when you're playing and it's a tough, like, thinking man's grueling, like, don't make any mistakes kind of match. That's what makes it the best. And it was nice to win something in the draft format that had some stakes to it rather than just something local. Or, you know, I've had some success at RDWs, but this was kind of nice to win something draft that had some stakes to it. So I got my Nationals qualification out of the way. And, you know, every one of those matches was against teams that were well-equipped to go the distance. So, you know, even if I had to take advantage of some lucky dice rolls to pull it off, I feel pretty good about, you know, navigating my way through just a maze of Red Hoods and Fireflies, because there were some tough games in there. So, a lot of fun. Again, the single elimination format, I hope that's not the way we go moving forward. A lot of fun. You know, it's nice to be playing. I mean, I don't think we mentioned this yet. Mm-hmm. Those games were played on Lucas Oil Stadium's field. We're at the south end of the stadium, so we're in the south end zone.
That's pretty cool.
Technically, I guess it's the southwest end zone because it's built, you know, kind of catty corner. But yeah, I mean, it's awesome.
Yeah, to your point earlier, though, you know, Firefly is just, I mean, it's just so oppressive when you don't have it. Or, I mean, just being played against you at all, it's just, you feel pressure because it really does kind of add a clock, right?
Yeah, and that's just it, especially if you've got, you know,
Are you thinking about Uncommon Mr. Miracle?
No, I'm thinking about the Huntress. So when fielded, you can knock out, like, deal her attack damage to a character and knock out a character. So she's also a bolt, right? So you just determine what's best. Is it best to knock out a Firefly, or is it best to knock out something on the other side so that you can swing with them all and get an extra damage from the Firefly you're about to field? Like, it's just so nutso. And that's what I had to play against Craig H. from St. Louis. That's what he was messing around with. And it was just, it was so bad. You know, because that guy doesn't make mistakes when he plays. I don't know how he is locally, but I've only ever played him in WKOs, and he does not make mistakes. And so it's so challenging and so tough. And really, honestly, that game probably just came down to rolls. That match came down to rolls, because that was one of the three-turn games, three-turn sudden death games that we played.
Mm-hmm. And, good enough.
Yeah, I mean, wow. That's... I don't think that was the... I don't know if both Firefly teams I played that day had the Huntress, but he did, and he was putting on a clinic. So that was tough.
Yeah, no, Huntress just fits so well with that card. It's just, it's amazing. Well, then let's move on to Modern. I see you said there were 14 people playing Modern.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give Modern the short shrift, but we are running just a touch long. So how did Modern go? First off, I believe Gary won that with Mask Ring, correct?
Yeah, and you know Gary had this typical like Guy Ring, Mask Ring, not Guy Ring, Mr. Multiple Man. There we go, Multiple Man, Mask Ring. But here's the shift. He had Hush on there to keep up with shields for shield ring teams, which was just brilliant. Like, I mean, to cycle that character to make sure that he was able to roll enough shields against shield rings. And I don't know that there were any shield ring teams there that performed well. There may have been. I just didn't see any. I finished in the top four. I lost to Gary, who won the thing. Gary put on a freaking clinic on how to play Mask Ring, you know. And he had to play, at least three other guys on his team in the win system. So his his clan, I guess, in the win system. So kudos to Gary for just playing lights out. And he ran a gauntlet. I mean, there may have only been 14 players, but, you know, I know he had to beat both me and Ryan Williams and Jin Kim. So I don't know who he had to play in the first round, but I know that was Jin in the top eight, me in the top four, and Ryan in the finals. So, you know, it's not like there aren't players with chops there. I mean, Jin's been perennial hanging around in some of these WKOs and Worlds. And, you know, Ryan and I finished fifth and sixth in Worlds this year. He finished fifth, I finished sixth. And I know Gary has been, like, pining after a win in an event like this, just kind of hanging around here and there. But to get that and to go through the gauntlet of his own clan, you know, I know it felt good for him. So, an absolute clinic, just exactly the way you're supposed to play. I mean, I played, the Gorilla Grodd guy team that, Stuart played in. I think Isaac played the same team in the virtual worlds and just won with it. And so we know it's a good team. And I felt good piloting it. I felt good, especially in the Mask Ring matchup. We felt like, you know, that's a good matchup, especially in testing. And so, kudos to Gary for running away with it in Modern with a Mask Ring that probably gives Shield Ring a run for its money.
That's good stuff. So then how did you feel about the diversity in what showed up with Modern?
You know, we didn't see Wonder Woman. Reflections, I felt like that would have been probably a big deal, especially with the ruling now. Now, we had asked the judge ahead of time how he would rule against Guy Gardner and against Beholder. And he said that, again, this predates the ruling. So, you know, we'll take WizKids for what they're doing with the errata to Guy Gardner. But because those abilities weren't specified as when attacks abilities, the judge was going to give the benefit to both Beholder and Guy Gardner. And so maybe that's why we didn't see Wonder Woman. Having the errata happen after that event, you know, may have changed things if we had seen it beforehand. Either way, I don't know. Maybe we would have seen Wonder Woman. Maybe we wouldn't have. I think it's healthy. I know, you know, one of the other top eight or top four teams was just some off the wall thing. You know, taxing fielding and doing some other funny stuff. I like it. I mean, I think the meta is in modern, at least, is much healthier than the meta in Golden was right before Modern was announced. I don't think we've seen enough Golden to really determine what's healthy and what's not. I mean, I know that if you run Spray and Bard, you're pretty much okay. You know, and that's a thing, right? So, you know, we need to probably see a little bit more Golden, but to have 3 days back to back to back, three different formats, three different winners, you know, despite the fact that there were a number of the same players who played all 3 days, it was a good weekend for Dice Masters. It really was.
Good stuff. Well, glad to hear it. It's nice to have a WizKids presence back at Gen Con. Of course, a lot they're doing these days with board gaming as well. So that was probably a big part of that effort. I'm sure there was some insistence, if nothing else, on the part of Zev to get things going that way. But one way or the other, that was a good thing to have happen, a nice thing. Three events, you know, at a big con like that, maybe... they sold out of badges. Probably some people who were thinking about it maybe last minute just would not have been able to go if they wanted to. But nice way to kind of set the tone for the very beginning. I'm sure WKOs will be here before we know it, and we'll just keep looking to the future from there. For now, we thank you for listening to us. We know that you could spend your time a lot of different ways, and as ever, we're truly happy that you spend it with us. If you like what we're doing, please leave a review on iTunes or wherever else you're getting podcasts. It does help us get the word out. The Attack Zone is a production of the Reserve Pool Network. Theme music is courtesy of Down Team Up. Promotional consideration has been given in the form of review product. Don't forget to check out our other podcasts, The Reserve Pool, every Thursday, and The Prep Area, operating opposite Tuesdays from us. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and until then, keep rolling.
Cheers. So, one of the games I've been wanting to check out and happened to just be close to Randy's booth when he was demoing for Brotherwise, is called First Martians.
Okay.
And, I don't know anything about the game except that it's called First Martians, it's co-op, and... You know, I have heard some good things. So I was excited. I was looking forward to seeing it. But I was walking the hall with Jin at the time, and we're like, oh, let's go over and check it out. You know, I know they've got some demo copies over there. I think that'd be worthwhile and whatever. So we go over, we see it, and It's just a beautiful looking game. And I, you know, at that point I tell myself, okay, I'm gonna buy it. You know, they brought some copies to sell. I don't know if I'm gonna buy it here. Next thing I know, Jin just elbows me and he says, "Hey, that's Ignacy. That's the designer." I'm like, "You recognize this guy?" Like, I just don't know people. Like, I don't know who people are. I don't. So he recognizes the designer, and he says, "Ignacy, would you mind if I buy it now? Would you mind signing my copy?"
That's awesome.
And he was like, "Oh, of course, yes, absolutely. I'd be honored to."
Everybody who's met Ignacy Trevishek, I can't say his name now, but Trevishek, I believe, always has amazing, awesome, generous things to say about him. Like, yes. He sounds like just a really cool guy.
I 1,000% agree to all of that, because he really is. But anyways, I was like, all right, well, if Jin is doing this, it seems like I should do it too. So I bought a copy. So he signed Jin's something like, you know, "Enjoy exploring Mars, Ignacy, whatever, Gen Con 2017.
Yeah.
He signed mine, "Have a good time, Ignacy, whatever, Gen Con 2017. Enjoy exploring Mars," for first Martians, or "Have a good time." I was like, you've got to be kidding me. How did I miss out on this? Like, "Enjoy exploring Mars, have a good time." It was the worst. It was so frustrating. Oh, I tried stealing Jin's copy. It didn't work out.